This is 89.9 WWNO. Yes, we're headed for another art-filled week. Are you making plans or do you need some ideas? Well, you've come to the right place. Whether you're in the mood for a classic Christmas stage drama, a retrospective photo exhibit, or a holiday concert to get you in the spirit of the season, it's all in the mixed media. Come along as we go inside the arts. Hi, I'm your host, Diane Mack. Le Petit Theatre returns ghosts to a magical set this holiday season with its production of Charles Dickens' A Christmas Carol. The miserly Ebenezer Scrooge learns big lessons in this Victorian classic. Artistic director Max Williams and cast members Curtis Billings and Kate Kuhn are here with details. Welcome.
Thank you.
Hello. Thank you for having us.
This is a tale that continues to warm hearts during the holidays, and it garnered several Big Easy nominations and was named Best Play of 2018 by the Times-Picayune, the New Orleans Advocate. Max, did those accolades prompt this year's return?
Well, you know, our hope was always that this would be a multi-year project. It's such a rich story that you can encounter it anew every year, I think.
So let's set the stage for this classic work. What is the storyline, and why does Ebenezer Scrooge not like Christmas?
This is Kate. He is dealing with all of his ghosts. A lot of what Scrooge is kind of wrestling with is his turmoil when it comes to Christmas Day. So Marley was somebody who was incredibly close. They were business partners and a big confidant and one of his chosen family, clearly from the way that he still utilizes remembrances from him. And I think that it's him kind of coming to terms with not only him and those relationships, but also his own mortality. And also on top of that, it is an idea, Charles Dickens, about the dangers of capitalism when it comes down to it. That greediness of just like hoarding to yourself and becoming as solitary as an oyster instead of opening up and looking at your community and looking at the people who support you and love you and are around you.
This is Curtis. The abandonment from his father and his sister, who he adored, died very young. The love of his life left him because his greed was kind of overtaking him. And so we get to see all these things when we visit his past, and you get a better insight into these things that shaped him and sort of made him calcify and shut down. And so you get to kind of see how he became what he is, and then you get to see his redemption towards the end, which is fun to look at.
He's visited by three ghosts that take him on that journey, past, present, and future. And Curtis and Kate, you play an important role in the softening of Scrooge's heart. Tell us about your characters.
Well, we play the Cratchits, Bob Cratchit and Mrs. Cratchit. And you know, Bob has worked for Scrooge for a number of years, and Scrooge has never really seen him. You know, Bob has always been there, and he treats him very poorly and pays him very meagerly. But Bob has always been a part of his life. But then Scrooge, during the Ghost of Christmas Presents visit, gets to go to his house and see how they live, how very poor they are, meet Tiny Tim, who is dying and crippled. You know, these things that have been going on right in Scrooge's periphery that he's never actually taken a close look at, that were right under his nose the whole time. And that touches him in a way that he realizes that just the smallest effort could change so much in these people's lives, not just these people, but the other people around him and the city itself. And so that's kind of how we play into all that.
This is Max. In this scene, the spirit of Christmas present has brought Scrooge to the Cratchit household, and they're having their Christmas feast. And it's kind of late in the meal, and they've been going around toasting everybody and everyone that they're thankful for.
To Mr. Scrooge! I'll give you Mr. Scrooge, the founder of the feast.
The founder of the feast, indeed. I wish I had him here. I'd give him a piece of my mind to feast upon, and I hope he'd have a good appetite for it.
My dear, the children, Christmas Day.
It should be Christmas Day, I am sure, on which one drinks the health to such an odious, stingy, hard, unfeeling man as Mr. Scrooge. You know he is, Robert. Nobody knows it better than you do, poor fellow.
My dear, Christmas Day.
I'll drink his health for your sake and the day's, not for his. Long life to him. A Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year. He'll be very merry and very happy, I have no doubt.
To Mr. Scrooge.
To Mr. Scrooge.
Hear, hear. Who else is in the cast?
We have 16 principal actors. We have 24 young performers that are in the show. That's a rotating cast. Notably, the cast is led in the role of Ebenezer Scrooge by the excellent Bob Eades Jr. Julia Delois and Zeb Hollins and John Neisler play the ghost of Christmas past, present, and future. And John also plays Jacob Marley, who kind of sets all this in motion.
And tell us about the set. What makes it magical?
The set is so beautiful. Evan Adamson is so wonderful. He works in wood. It looks like the ironwork that is a part of New Orleans. There is that very old work that moves through it. Not only that, but there's also like moving carriages that come in and out on the stage as well. Wow. And some really wonderful and magical surprises when it comes to the ghosts.
You know, some scary stuff. Their mission is to scare Scrooge straight. I was looking at it the other day and I thought, oh boy, this is chilling. You know, we drop glitter from the sky and we make it snow on stage.
Yeah.
And you're just trying to introduce all the wonderful, magical things that theater can do.
And we neglected to mention the other design elements, the costumes, the lighting, our backstage crew that is making all these magical moves happen. Just every element comes together in a way that really, hopefully, transports the audience as to another place in time, and Scrooge himself from his bedchamber to his childhood to the streets of London.
The incredibly intricate Victorian-era costumes by Kathleen Van Horn, they're just amazing.
How are you hoping this classic tale will transform audiences this holiday season?
This time of year, we get to take the opportunity to reflect on the past and to appreciate the present, and it inspires me to want to do better in the future. I hope the audiences will take that away and do it with a carol in their hearts.
Artistic director Max Williams and cast members Curtis Billings and Kate Kuhn, thanks so much for stopping by.
Thank you so much.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having us.
Performances of A Christmas Carol run through December 23rd at Le Petit Theatre, 616 St. Peter Street. More info is online at lepetittheatre.com. A renowned fine art photographer and New Orleans native who has captured jazz legends, entertainment celebrities, and the very soul of this city through his lens is celebrating a milestone with the opening of a new exhibit. Stephen Forster, Four Decades of New Orleans Iconography, opens this weekend at the New Orleans Jazz and Heritage Gallery in conjunction with the Photo NOLA Festival. Forster, formerly with the Times-Picayune, the New Orleans Advocate, is moving in a new direction with his work, teaming up with designer-photographer Jake Hunter, whose works are also featured in the exhibit. Stephen and Jake are here. Welcome.
Hello. Glad to be here.
So much has happened since we last spoke. Congratulations on your exhibit.
Thank you so much.
Does it seem like 40 years have passed since you began your professional career?
And that's the funny part. I'm getting to where I wanted to be 40 years ago. That part's exciting.
Your works are in museums across the country and beyond, as well as private collections, but they have not been readily available to the general public. That is, I believe, until now. Tell us about your partnership with Jake Hunter and how you are taking your work to a new level.
Jay came up with the idea of sort of an online way of reaching out to more people rather than doing an exhibition.
I think the idea was born out of your last show, the celebrity show, and the gallery didn't sell very well. And so I thought people who buy art might be more entertained instead of having to go out and deal with a social crowd. They could just view the work online and from the comfort of their home and make their choice, and everything would be kept in-house and done privately.
Now, I imagine it must have been difficult choosing which works would be included in this show as you look back over your career. Tell us, Stephen, how you got your start in photography and about the celebrities you photographed along the way.
When I was very young, I was in a store with my mom, and I saw a camera. Oh, and I must have been 6 or 7 years old or something, and I wanted a camera. It was a Brownie, actually. It was sitting way up, and I wanted to get that, and she, being so young, was, you know, kind of curious about a strange kid wanting a camera. So to make sure that I was serious about it, she said, if you come up with half, I'll come up with half. So I did chores and everything I could do and came up with half. That was it. And then shot home movies and for the family and things like that, and then into school and just kept going.
And your first big break?
I think the New Orleans Museum of Art. It was an exhibition, History of Photography in Louisiana, 1900 to 1980, and I was 1980. that was exciting. And then I started doing exhibitions. I did a big exhibition at the Sanger, which was held over. Elizabeth Taylor was doing a show there, and Rex Harrison. And it was so exciting because 3,000 people were going into the lobby before and during intermission. So I had a good audience. And then, you know, eventually made it into the galleries, but still did public work. And then eventually publications.
So what will we see in the exhibit? What's included in the show?
It's a collection of his best works over the 40 years. So the Ella Fitzgerald piece, Ethel Merman's last performance, Little Rum Boogie, you know, pieces that no one can find anymore. They can't be recreated. We've sifted through his archives and really chosen these very eclectic, very meaningful, substantial pieces that dictate what I think is a very important piece of New Orleans history, which he is so very good at capturing.
The first photo you talked about was Ella Fitzgerald.
Yeah.
She looms large in your life.
Oh, Ella is extremely important to me. When I listen to her, I think she centers me. There's something about her voice, something about the freedom of her voice when she starts scat singing. She sort of let me know in her own way by listening to her. I think that there are no boundaries in art and to go for it. So I go to see her in concert. And of course, it's like in the 70s and my friends are rock and rollers and I go by myself. Municipal Auditorium. I'm so excited. I'm in the third row. And at the end of the concert, she said, I hear I have a boyfriend in the house. And I'm thinking, I mean, I'm 17. So I'm thinking, you know, how do they know I have all these records? And she says, Stevie, will you come up here? And I'm like, and I'm starting to get up. And the spotlight comes and it goes across me. And then it goes to the row in front of me. And Stevie Wonder was sitting right there.
Oh, that's priceless.
And, you know, I had to look like I was just straightening up myself or something in the chair. Like, this is normal. And I had to let Stevie Wonder go up. And he did, and he sang with her. And there's a recording of them. It was magic.
Wow, it sure sounds like it was. In addition to the national celebrities, you also have New Orleans jazz legends in the show?
Oh, yeah. All through the years, I photographed everybody publicizing them. So I did it for love of jazz and New Orleans and the musicians to help, because jazz musicians don't think about publicity most of the time. They think about their horn.
Many of us remember Stephen Forster's Party Central in the New Orleans Advocate and your photography on the Big Easy page in the Sunday editions of the Times-Picayune. How does the city of New Orleans feed your creative soul?
Oh, what was exciting was every night was different. That sounds crazy, you know, after doing it for more than 25 years of just that. But you never know in New Orleans. I never knew when I was going into something, whether they were going to be in costumes, who was going to be performing, you know, or things like that. It was always a joy.
Now, Jake, your sunsets are incredible. They're bursting with color. Tell us about yourself and the works we'll see in your exhibit.
Most of my stuff is landscapes, more generalized photography. I grew up in Florida, so that's what I'm surrounded by. I do love the beach, so part of that passion probably comes out. So yeah, this is an introduction to ease slowly into the photography scene.
I love his work. So now to partner in a business way with someone who is a brilliant creative mind and who I respect, you know, nothing's out of reach.
What makes it work is having somebody that is a confidant and really believes in what each other can do. And that really works for us.
Now, as you move to new heights with your work, what is the next big adventure you hope to capture with your lens?
Global.
Yeah.
We are going to travel. We are online now, www.forsterhunter.com.
Photographers, Stephen Forster and Jake Hunter, I wish you all the best.
Thank you for having us, and I want to say that
the show wouldn't be possible without our friends and supporters.
The exhibit, Stephen Forster, Four Decades of New Orleans Iconography, along with works by photographer Jake Hunter, opens Saturday evening, December 14th, with an artist reception from 6 until 9 at the New Orleans Jazz and Heritage Gallery, 1201 North Rampart Street. The exhibit will be on view through the end of the month. You're listening to Inside the Arts on 89.9 WWNO, New Orleans Public Radio. I'm Diane Mack. Oh, crap, it's Christmas. Celebrates a milestone. The Holiday Spectacular by musical couple Debbie Davis and Matt Perrine turns five this year. Vocalist Debbie Davis will join a host of musical celebrities in an evening of music and holiday cheer. Debbie is here. Welcome back and congratulations.
It's a real pleasure to be back on the show. Thank you for having me.
I see you have brought your ukulele with you.
I have, and that's not nearly the threat that it sounds like, so don't anybody be afraid.
Will you play as well as sing for us?
I would be happy to. That was the plan.
That's going to be a real treat. First, let's talk about this milestone for your CD and Holiday Spectacular with that curious name. Oh, crap, it's Christmas. I believe this was one big happy accident for you and Matt.
Well, it was. It started out in, I think it was 2002. We didn't have any money, and it started out as a musical Christmas card for our friends and family. We went into the studio of Mike West in the Ninth Ward Pick and Parlor, and we recorded five tracks, three of which made it onto the record, I believe. And that's kind of how it started. And the title, Oh Crap, It's Christmas, came because I had walked into a Walgreens 2 days before Halloween that same year looking for Halloween candy and was greeted by no Halloween candy, but instead Christmas trees and twinkle lights. And I was heard to exclaim to no one in particular, oh crap, it's Christmas. And that became the title of the record because there was really no other sentiment that expressed it quite so well. And it just kept following us around. So the record named itself, as many records often do.
Do you get much pushback from that title?
You know, I think it gives people the wrong impression about the idea of the show, that it's going to be a little snarkier than it is, or that it's going to be a little too cool for school, or that we're going to have some sort of idea that we don't really like Christmas. Really, nothing could be further from the truth. I am such a gigantic Christmas nerd, and I hope I've made that abundantly clear by now, that Christmas is really proof to me that we still have hope as a species, that 3 or 4 weeks out of the year, we're all capable of doing good by and for each other, if only temporarily. And I see it. I see it in strangers. I see it in my friends. I see it in these wonderful people who keep accepting my phone calls in the middle of October, asking them if they want to do Christmas songs with me in the middle of December. And then they show up, and through sheer merit of the fact that they're wonderful people and wonderful musicians, and they have a little hope in their souls for humanity, too. The show is always wonderful.
Debbie, you wear several hats. You were one of the Pfister Sisters before going solo.
Correct.
You perform with many of the city's musical luminaries. Did you come from a musical family?
I did. Both my parents were classically trained and musical theater and opera singers. So I come by it honestly. If you wanted to be heard in my family, you had to sing. So my mom is a soprano. My father was a basso profundo. So in the range of things, I land somewhere in the tenor between the two of them.
Where are you originally from?
I was born in Queens and grew up in New Jersey. I moved down here in 1997.
And how did you fall in love with New Orleans?
I fell in love with New Orleans because I fell in love with a tuba player, God help me, and the entire trajectory of my life changed.
Wow.
And now here I am.
And you have a who's who list of musicians performing with you at this year's Holiday Spectacular. Who are the headliners?
They're all headliners to me. Mashiya Lake, my darling friend. We're going to get into trouble, you know, the kind we can get into on stage. She's going to come and sing. Susan Cousel, we're going to do a couple songs together. The wonderful Dana Kurtz, who is also from New Jersey. We've got a special song that we're going to do together. Jonathan Priedus from the Breton Sound. Beth Patterson. Darwin Davis, who's actually my sister, and coming in from Texas. She's going to sing an original Christmas song that she wrote. My son Ben is going to be playing with his musical partners, Angelina Cardarelli and Killian Dusan. And then the house band is Alex McMurray, my favorite Christmas elf, Andre Bowron on drums and piano, Andy Wolf making a triumphant return to electric and upright bass, subbing in for Matt this year, Jack Kraft on cello and glockenspiel, and Josh Paxton on piano.
Wow.
Oh, and my mom is adding an air of legitimacy to the whole affair. So behave yourselves, people. My mom will be there.
Take us through the experience. Tell us about some of your favorite songs that you perform, and maybe we can get you to perform one for us.
Well, I don't want to give too much away, but I will give you one song that we're going to do. It's new to me, but it's an old song. Judy Garland sang it first in a movie called The Good Old Summertime. But Bette Midler recorded it again for her Christmas record, and it kind of spun my head around. It's been following me around ever since.
Can you play us out?
Sure thing, I'd love to. Merry Christmas. Have a very, very Merry Christmas. Dream about your heart's desire. Christmas Eve when you retire, Santa Claus will stop, and I know he'll drop exactly what you wanted from your chimney top. So be jolly, have a holiday as gay as holly. May the ones you love be near you, with the laugh of friends to cheer you. When the church bells ring like the angels sing, and you hear the joyous hymn they chime, hang a wish from me on your Christmas tree for a very Merry Christmas time.
Oh crap, it's Christmas. A musical holiday spectacular with Debbie Davis and friends will take place on Sunday, December 15th, 7 p.m. at Cafe Istanbul, 2372 St. Claude Avenue. More info is online at ohcrapitschristmas.net.
To cheer you when the church bells ring like the angels sing, and you hear the joyous hymn they chime, hang a wish from me on your Christmas tree for a very Merry Christmas time.
That's our show for this week. Major support for Inside the Arts comes from the Hellas Foundation. Additional support comes from the Petit Theater. Our program is a production of WWNO and is archived at WWNO.org. I'll be back with more ideas for your artistic palette on Tuesdays at 1 p.m., Wednesdays at 8:30 p.m., and a shortened edition on Thursday mornings at 8:45 when we'll go Inside the Arts. I'm Diane Mack.